We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Setting the Pace, and joining me now is the one and only Zach Noble. He is the master of grading your trades on Twitter. Zach, what's going on, man?
Well, just another fun night around the league, and a lot of upsets tonight happening, it looks like, and some big comeback wins, so it's been a fun first half of the first set of games so far.
Yeah, it always is fun at the beginning of the year to see these teams that get out to big starts, and then eventually, they just kind of fall apart or they end up missing the playoffs. And you kind of wonder what happened at the beginning of the year. Now, are there any teams in mind that you think that has gotten off to a pretty good start and might end up, not finishing that way when the season's over?
I mean, the two obvious for me would be the Orlando Magic and Cleveland Cavs. I think both of them, I predicted both of them at the beginning of the year to be in that 8th to 12th spot hunt. I mean, they're in a tier of, I don't know, six or seven teams that could finish as high as six and finish as low as like 13, 14. So I just don't think they're going to finish one that Orlando is in right now and Cleveland's sitting in the three spot. I don't think they'll finish anywhere close to that. And from the West, it would be definitely Sacramento. Don't think they're going to even touch the playoffs. Don't even think they'll be that competitive all the way through. But they're just teams that are taking advantage of the good teams struggling or sitting out guys or a little bruised up and not taking these first couple games that seriously.
Yeah, no, when the Pacers do play the Cavaliers on New Year's Eve. So most of our listeners will be listening to this in the morning. So, you know, that's a team I'm interested in seeing because the Pacers got to play them twice in the preseason. And, you know, when they were playing their starters, they clearly looked like the better team. But at the end of the game, the Cavs won it in the fourth quarter both times. So, you know, it's really kind of hard to get an idea of what this team's going to be because Colin Sexton did not play in the preseason as well. So it was who's the guy they drafted again? Okoro?
Darius Garland? No, or this year, Okoro.
Yeah, Okoro. Yep. And I think he's going to be out tomorrow as well for the Cavs as well as Kevin Love. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting matchup. No TJ Warren as he's out with plantar fasciitis. So, just looking at this Cavs team, is there anything that you've noticed about them that they're doing different from last year that's gotten them off to a good start?
You know, I just think having some structure with JB Bickerstaff in play, I think is a big help. Finally getting his legs on him, realizing it's his team and seeing a vision that he wants. I mean, the team was so in flux last year of guys in and out and just Andre Drummond coming in the middle of the year, that sort of thing. And Darius Garland had a really up and down year throughout. They were really concerned of how they were going to play with Sexton, Garland, Sexlin out there, as they like to call it. Just if they're ever going to like work together. And people were so focused on that year one. And then Andre Drummond just didn't look like he gave a damn last year when he got there. So now, I mean, it's a contract year for Andre Drummond. That matters. It's another year of Sexton and Garland developing. Sexton was really the only bright spot in all of Cleveland last year, and he's translating even further, getting the Ball is Life podcast bump after being on our show, of course. And he's showing out. I mean, I'm really liking the leap I'm seeing from Sexton again. And now Garland looking like the number, I think, four or five pick that he was. But he's everything I had imagined when he got drafted. Just had a very average or low mediocre year. So I think this team is really gelling. It's really cohesive on paper too. Like, they got their defined positions, they got their defined roles, and that's how a team where you might not think Sexton and Garland would fit, just looking at them as one individual player.
Yeah, I think you bring up a great point talking about Bickerstaff kind of establishing that culture there, moving on from John Beilein, who really just kind of was a disappointment by all means necessary. I mean, this is a guy that I think a lot of people had high hopes for. Had some great success in Michigan and then just completely came into the NBA and flaked out. And unfortunately, you know, made some inappropriate comments and got himself fired and lost the respect of the teammates or of his players in the locker room. So move on to Bickerstaff. I think that's a big, big key in the culture change and why guys probably seem more happy. But I also think, you know, there's a guy on this team that has been kind of talked about all year long. It's a very short year, but this season, Larry Nance Jr. And he's just you know, no matter where Larry Nance has been, like, he's not been like a great player, but I think he's a solid role player. And I think he's a guy that can make a difference whenever he's in the game.
No, you make a great point. Larry Nance is definitely maybe their most improved and impactful player. I mean, just 3-point percentage. I mean, his shot looks so much better. If like his release is the biggest thing I can see in his form. It's not flailing out as much. It's just really straight on. His feet are good now. And it really had funky mechanics for most of his first 7 years in the league. And it's crazy. It's taken this long. And shooting is a skill set that has been developed so much over time, and just guys who decide to put it in the summer and get help from a Drew Hanlon type or one of these really good trainers out there. There's just so many different tools and whatnot. And I don't know what Larry Nance did, but whatever it did, he did, it's working. He's shooting a career high attempts, and I think it's going to stick. I don't think it's one of those early small sample sizes, but averaging a career high in assists right now at 4.5 too. Like, this guy is getting usage. He's getting used. I mean, maybe that's all he needed to unlock his really good passing and playmaking ability. I mean, I know he's always had that, but it's being exposed because they know this guy is a significant player on this team and what he can truly bring. I mean, it's almost like a Draymond Green-esque player minus not such a good defender. I mean, he's a good defender. Don't get me wrong. Larry Nance is a very good defender. He's just not elite like Draymond Green. But the rest of the game is very comparable outside of he's a way better shooter right now, and Draymond Green was a much better defender, I'd say.
Yeah. Well, Pacer fans do not really care for Larry Nance Jr. as he had a game winner against them back in 2018, about 2 years ago from this date now. So Pacer fans are not too enthralled with him as a player from the game winner that he had against them. But I got to talk about Victor Oladipo. Now, this is a guy that he struggled in the playoffs, really did not have a handle, seemed to be real hesitant. The offense for the Pacers looked incredibly stagnant during the playoffs, but now under new coach Nate Bjorkman, this season Oladipo has the lowest usage rate of his entire career with the Pacers. But he's averaging 22.7 points, 5.7 rebounds, 3.7 assists, one steal a game. He's shooting 83% on his free throws, 56% from three, 61% from the field. He has a 73% true shooting percentage and 119.8 offensive rating. So this guy has been on fire in the three of the four games that he's been able to play, the Pacers have played. So what are your thoughts on Oladipo in this contract year?
So first of all, it was amazing to me all of last year and just his recovery and his comeback from his injury, of how many people are just writing him off immediately and like, oh, this guy's never going to be the same. He's never going to get back. you obviously don't know Victor Oladipo. Like, I've ever since college, I've just looked at this guy as a relentless worker and that is super passionate and obsessed with this game. And there's no way he's going to just let his career fade off without giving it everything he's got. And I mean, it's 2020. I think most people, I mean, when they're really young, like he is, recover from injuries, unless it's year after year. I mean, I'm trying to think of like a Greg Oden. Okay. But Victor Oladipo, I didn't think there was any chance he wasn't going to recover. And that's just one of the craziest offseason myths I was coming across over and over again. But yeah, everything you said about Victor Oladipo, I mean, is accurate. I mean, his stats, I think, are very true to, I mean, how he's playing on the film. And it's not like he's out there just trying to get his stats either and force stuff up and make his force known. It's he's fitting in. He's abiding by the rules Nate Bjorken's putting in play and what the other players around him, Malcolm Brogdon, Sabonis, what they're allowing him to do with his game. And it's working out awesome. I mean, the only guy I'm worrying about on the Pacers right now is Turner. Yet everybody else, I mean, I love the fit. I love what they got going on. And it's a lot of fun to watch because there is so much talent now that Oladipo is getting back to form.
Yeah. Well, I will say this, because when it comes to Oladipo and Turner, those guys were the names that we all talked about, especially in the Indiana side of things, you know, those guys being the possible trade candidates in the offseason. And then I think as we get closer to the trade deadline, depending on where the Pacers are at, their names could resurface. We'll see what happens. But at this point right now, like, I think Oladipo, when I view Oladipo and how he's playing, I think it makes a ton of sense for him to buy into the system, not try to overdo it, to pick his spots when he's given the opportunity and prove that he's back. Now, I am a little bit shocked that you said you had no doubt that he would return to his former self, because this is an injury that no one has really successfully come back from and reached a level they once previously had. Like, Tony Parker had it, came back and played, but that was towards the end of his career. It ended Charles Barkley's career. So this is a very serious injury. So I don't know if the Pacers are, you know, I think when it comes down to it, at the very end of the day, when it comes to the offseason, if he's still on the team, I think it'll all come down to the numbers, what Indiana is willing to pay him and what other teams are willing to pay him. Will the Pacers overpay for him if he reaches that point? I think there's a possibility they could. But at the same time, they've got extensions coming up for Aaron Holiday and TJ Warren in 2021, 2022. So that's something that you got to keep in the back of your mind. And the Pacers, we know, are a very, not cheap team, but they don't like to jump into that luxury tax if they can avoid it and they don't feel like they have the pieces to win a championship. Yeah. So it's a tough thing. You know that as a small market, trying to get the right fit in here. But personally, I am incredibly impressed with Oladipo his first three games in.
Yeah, so to your point, I mean, that's going to be the thing you got to monitor the most closely in Indiana all year is Oladipo's happiness, the way he fits and how he's feeling about this situation here. Because, I mean, yeah, a small market doesn't want to lose a player that can return a decent amount back for nothing. But also with that said, I wouldn't think about it even remotely until the trade deadline. Like, I wouldn't even consider, I mean, anything outside of, hey, how are we doing? Where are you at with things, Victor? And just trying to build a relationship, making sure he's happy. And I mean, he's comfortable here and everything, but not, I mean, I wouldn't go necessarily out of your way and just figure out, because if you try to go out of your way too, it could expose yourselves and it might be easy for him to sneak things past them and whatnot, of him trying to fake it so he doesn't get moved and he can just go on his own off after the year. And a lot of teams will get played like that all the time. So honestly, I would just try to keep a bird's eye view, and I mean, just leave it up to it is what it is until the trade deadline, and then really make a big sound decision based on where the team is and how he looks there. And if he looks great, I mean, it's all going to come down to his happiness. I don't think it's going to come down to money at all. I think the money's going to be out there the same regardless everywhere. I really do. I don't think, if he's playing great, Indiana will want to pay for him if they're winning, because then if he's playing great, they're winning, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. To some extent, it just depends on how the other guys play as well. If this plantar fasciitis continues to mess with TJ Warren, how does that impact him playing? Because he was a huge part of the Pacers' success last season. This year, he's still yet to really, you know, get his feet back, you know, to where he once was, you know, get his feet on the ground and be that scorer that he was. But I also think it's going to be hard for him to, you know, there's just so many guys on this Pacers team that can score. You kind of brought up Turner and his fit and stuff like that. Like, Turner right now to me is in the perfect, I mean, he's accepting the role, and I think he's handling it perfectly, because there's not enough touches between Sabonis, Warren, Brogdon, and Oladipo for Turner to really get his fair shot at, you know, showcasing what he can do offensively. But on the defensive end, he is swallowing guys up at the rim, leads the league in blocks. I think he has 20 total blocks through four games. So he's averaging 5 blocks a game. I mean, he's just been a monster on the glass, protecting the rim. And he's just a guy that I think defensively is continuing to improve and, you know, evolve as a defensive rim protector and just a defensive player overall. But when it comes to Sabonis, this is a guy that continues to be the focal point of the Pacers offense. And if you watched any of those two Celtics games, you can see their focal point was stopping Domas and really kind of, in a sense, like they do with Giannis, build a wall to keep him out of the paint. And if you look at his shot chart, I posted these on Twitter yesterday. I stayed up last night and was kind of researching all of how he played and where he was getting his shots from. I mean, he touched the ball pretty much every single possession. But that's where Vic and Brogdon and Warren kind of got their baskets from, was feeding off of, you know, dribble handoffs, pick and rolls, or, you know, when they would cut back door, Sabonis would find him, stuff like that. Sabonis was involved in so many plays, even though he wasn't scoring the same way and having that same impact. That's why I think, you know, Oladipo doesn't have to be the best player on this team, and they can allow Sabonis to be the focal point, and he can kind of thrive as that secondary guy, which I think is more his natural fit.
So you're telling me Turner's touches are incredibly high right now?
No, they're incredibly low.
Okay. No, that's what I was getting
on at. On the offensive end, he doesn't like – I mean, I don't even know what his numbers are, but he's probably getting around 9 to 10 field goal attempts compared to the rest of the team. But
I didn't know if he was getting more touches than his field goal attempts are putting out. So, yeah, there's no way he can be happy in the role he has offensively, right?
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, you talk about a guy just 2 years ago was starting over Sabonis and was constantly involved in the pick and pop with Darren Collison, which I'm sure you remember that because they ran so many plays like that. But now it's pretty much he's a spot up 3-point shooter. He cuts every once in a while, but they're not utilizing him in that same role. And Sabonis has kind of just been that focal point, hogging the touches. I mean, hogging is a bad word, I guess you could say, but they're just more efficient when Sabonis is that focal point of the offense. And so Turner's had to take a little bit of a backseat, but they have put Turner in a little bit more with the second unit, which I think has benefited him and gotten him some more touches.
No, I got you.
So that's where I'm at on that whole thing. But
he's been amazing defensively, though. It's he's all bought in on that. There's no way.
He came out and said it.
It's awesome. I love watching him on the defensive side. I mean, Indiana, I mean, they're still carrying – their defensive prowess under Nate for sure. It's just the one difference I'm really noticing is the pace. I mean, the pace and is creating more of an offensive urgency and just getting out way more attempts, I think. And it's definitely a much more fun brand of basketball to watch. And a lot of that's coming with Oladipo being much better, I'd imagine.
Yeah, that's part of it. But it's also just like the innovation, the creativity, the, you know, with McMillan, it was pretty much do the same thing over and over. Like, you would have never seen a Domas Sabonis fake handoff go to the basket and hit the game winner with Nate McMillan. That was not his go-to play. In fact, Pacer fans are very familiar. There's a play called the India play, which they ran while overseas in the preseason against the Kings in India. And TJ Warren hit a go-ahead, or I think he hit a game-tying three or something like that. And literally, Nate McMillan called that play pretty much every time there was a last you know, second play, and the Pacers had the ball with the sideline out of bounds play, and it's like the defense just knew it was going to happen. The Pacers had no idea what to do, and so it's just like I couldn't believe he continued to run it. But Bjorkren last night, you kind of saw some of the same iteration where Sabonis did hand the ball off to Justin Holiday, but then Holiday got the ball stolen from him because clearly he was looking to hand it off to Brogdon or Oladipo, whoever was coming up the opposite way, and then Jaylen Brown got in there and stole the ball. But you know, the Pacers, they're 3-1 right now. And, you know, some people had them missing the playoffs, which I thought was kind of shocking, just considering the continuity of this team. But overall, you know, you talk about this new system, Zach. I don't know if you've got a chance to watch much of the Pacers game, but Pacers games this year.
Three full games.
You watched three full games?
Three full games, yeah.
Okay, so I think personally right now, like if you're looking overall consistency, it's been Sabonis on the offensive end, Miles on the defensive end, but someone that's really been a huge part of the Pacers' success is TJ McConnell with the bench.
Yeah, no, he's been impressive, and I liked him a lot last year. I mean, he was very underrated, especially with the emergence of Aaron Holiday last year. That's what took away from TJ McConnell being in the spotlight quite a bit. But Aaron Holiday has kind of been disappointing me this year. It's kind of the reverse now.
Well, he's had a rough year. Defensively, the Pacers have kind of changed things up. So while their defense hasn't taken that big of a hit, they are playing a much more different style where they're not funneling everything to Miles at the paint, which is shocking because Turner is still getting so many blocks, but they're really trying to get out there, switch a lot. I mean, I think there's been a couple of times I've seen Sabonis get out there and guard Jaylen Brown, and he actually you know, moved his feet pretty well and stayed in front of him. So there's like they're doing different iterations, but I think Peyton Pritchard really had his way with Aaron Holiday in that game on Tuesday night. Oh, yeah. Overplaying him too much, Peyton Pritchard get by him, you know, and Aaron, he's just a young guy. And I feel like, you know, a lot of Pacer fans want to see him be that primary ball handler. And with how consistent and steady McConnell is, I can see why it's hard for coaches to want to, you know, take away McConnell's minutes and let Holiday kind of be unleashed as that backup point guard. But I'm hoping over time, Bjorkren, who was brought in here to try to develop these younger players like the Gogo Batadzes and Aaron Holidays and Edmund Sumners of this team, will allow for Aaron Holiday to get those opportunities to showcase what his potential is.
Hey, ain't nobody developing Edmund Sumnerman. Let's be honest.
Oh, really? You're not a big Sumner fan?
Not at all. I don't think he really needs to see the court a whole lot. But, hey, I could be wrong. Maybe he is a Nick Nurse in the making, and he can just make any wine out of any grapes.
If you have any Pacer fans in your mentions, it's because Edmund Sumner is a beloved Pacer.
I know it.
And, well, I think
we're Eliza things... Johnson. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, goodness. Alizé, yeah.
Alizé,
yeah. Can't even say his name, but it's all right. If I didn't cover the team, I wouldn't know how to say it either. But Edmund Sumner, though, this is a guy that a lot of Pacer fans were wanting to start in the playoffs whenever Sabonis was out. They're like, you got to put him in there to guard these three-point shooters because he is super lanky. That's one thing he's really good at, super lanky, and he's super quick. So if he gets his hand, you know, in the passing lanes, gets a deflection, I mean, he's going to finish that play. But I think his shot's really inconsistent. He's a little thin, you know, not strong enough to handle the strength of bigger guards getting into his body. So, you know, Sumner, he's a fine player, but not someone I'm expecting to get a lot of time. But overall, you know, this Pacers team, just, you know, people might want them to make changes. I clearly wanted them to make a move in the offseason, but I'm thoroughly enjoying what they're doing this season, and I'm really excited for what they could be in the future, because if Oladipo can, like you said, get back to who he once was, I mean, 34 minutes last night, that's got to be, you know, outside of the playoffs, a season high for him since his return of injury. So I'm just hoping that little by little he's able to just work through those kinks and just become, you know, an all-star level player once again.
Absolutely. And let's be real here. If Oladipo gets back to an all-NBA type player as he was a couple of years back, and Sabonis is true to the jump he's in the middle of taking right now, being an even further all-NBA guy that he is, that's enough. And then you throw in Malcolm Brogdon in there, who's constantly improving, and TJ Warren, hopefully, with maybe Miles Turner's fully getting back to the defensive player of the year type player he was. If he just keeps this up, yeah, it will be. And I'm not just talking about the blocks. But one absurd stat I just noticed is TJ McConnell hasn't shot 1-3 in 72 minutes this year.
Well, if you saw him wind up one in preseason, you would understand why. It takes him 7 seconds just to get the shot ready. Yeah.
I think his form has had to have changed. I haven't watched film on him for a couple of years from his form, from when he was hoisting it quite a bit in his Philly days. Not a ton, but I mean, he actually would take him on a game-to-game basis for sure. I mean,
yeah,
27 of 62 was his best year, 31 of 89, which nothing to celebrate by any means, but I mean, it's still something. It's still a guy that's not afraid to shoot him.
Yeah.
So it's a different dimension to bring a backup point guard that's plays like TJ McConnell that just refuses to shoot threes.
Well, it's just weird because McConnell's undersized. He doesn't shoot threes and he's got no length on his arms. Like, you know, you look at Aaron Holiday, this guy's like 6'2", I think. I don't even remember, but he's like got a 6'7" wingspan. Like McConnell doesn't have that wingspan. He's just kind of got like normal arms. He's not got that freak athleticism, but it's just pure heart and hustle that gets him those minutes on the court. But you know, you brought up Brogdon. You said he continues to get better every year. And I think this is a guy, like when you talk about all the Pacers players, you realize that Brogdon is just that steady hand, but a lot of people always talk about, you know, this team's potential relies on Victor Oladipo, relies on what Sabonis does, you know, what TJ Warren does. But I feel like ever since we've gotten Brogdon, he's kind of been lost in the shuffle a little bit as far as how impactful he can be. Mm-hmm. So when you look at Brogdon, just number one, how big of an impact can he be on this Pacers team? And what are your overall thoughts on him as a player?
Yeah, I've been as big of a Malcolm Brogdon guy as anybody, even since his Milwaukee days. I was high on him before the draft even. And he came into the league as a winning player. Not many players ever do that and can do that. I mean, if you look at this rookie class in general, I mean, yeah, there's guys making impact statistically we didn't see him making, but they're not making impacts winning like Malcolm Brogdon did his rookie year. And then when he got to Indiana, he actually became from an impactful starter to like a really, really high end starter. Like this guy, I honestly thought like last year he could still get to like an all-star level type player, an all NBA guy, like third team. Not, I don't see ever any higher than that, but it's just once people start recognizing like how important he is to this defense. I mean, he's a very good on-ball defender. He's an even better team defender. As smart of a player gets, it's just he's not sexy. He doesn't pop. I mean, I don't know what – I mean, he's like Fred VanVleet in a lot of ways for the impact he makes, and not necessarily as a player, but as the impact he makes. But people love watching Fred a lot more than Malcolm for some reason. I mean, yes, because of the speed, I think. And attacking the rim a little more, but from an intelligence standpoint and having a guy that you know what you're going to get night after night, every team needs and wants Malcolm Brogdon, and he's on such a valuable contract. Like it's wild. Like I love this guy. And I just wish he got to the rim more. That's the biggest thing. I wish he was able to draw a little more contact and get to the free throw line, because it would add such a higher dimension to his ceiling and his game overall. But I mean, from 7 assists last year to bringing Oladipo back to come into form and still getting 6.5 assists, his steals are at a career high right now. I think all of his stats could stick. I just hope his 3-point percentage gets back a little higher, but hey, he's shooting 6 attempts at 33%. I'm never going to balk at that. I mean, it's, from a smart player like him that does a whole lot of other shit.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I have brought up that same point that you brought up about him finishing at the rim, because it's like, this is a guy, 6'6", 230 pounds. Like, he's got the body size. He should be able to finish over other opposing point guards. And I know sometimes that he doesn't always get that defensive matchup, because sometimes they might put the bigger guard on him because Oladipo is smaller overall in size. I think Oladipo is like 6'4", 6'5", and got about maybe, you know, 10 or 15 pounds less than Brogdon on his overall weight. So I understand why some teams kind of change it up. And Brogdon usually finds himself guarding the bigger of the two guards as well when he's out there with Oladipo. So, I mean, I agree with all of that. And you brought up Fred VanVleet. And, you know, since this is there's so many comparisons to the Raptors, when I look at Oladipo and Brogdon, do you see any similarities, any comps to Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet?
I mean, quality and impact. Yeah. Play style. Somewhat, yeah. I mean, Brogdon obviously would be Van Vliet, and Oladipo would be more Lowry, but I mean, Oladipo is the most exciting of the whole bunch for sure. And then, but I mean, yeah, quality and skill level and just what they bring to a team. Yeah. Very equal. Absolutely. I think. Yeah. And I think this Pacer, I mean, any team Malcolm Brogdon is on and Sabonis is on are always going to be one of the most underrated teams. Let's be honest. Yeah. I think they're two of the most underrated players in the league. And I'll always think that. One, they're playing in Indiana. Two, that's just the way they play. But I'm always a guy that loves the differentiators, the play styles, the differentiations and play styles. And I just love watching people who do stuff differently. And Brogdon is a guy that will always be able to play with anybody in any situation. And he's getting better. And it's a different team. It's a different way of play than it was last year.
All right, Zach. So as we wrap this up with Pacers talk, and I'll give you the floor to talk anything NBA you want after this, but what is your ceiling and floor for this Pacers team for the rest of the season?
Yeah, so it's all going to come down to TJ Warren. January 2nd, I mean, it doesn't seem like to be that bad. What's your intel? What do you got for me?
Well, what do you mean? What's my answer?
When's he coming back? I mean, how serious?
I don't know, because like he didn't play in the preseason, but then he came back for the opener against the Knicks and he was kind of hobbling. Then he kind of hobbled last night. Like, you know, plantar fasciitis is something that doesn't go away unless it tears. Right. You can't have surgery. So it's just something you got to have to work through. So it could linger all season long and they might just have to monitor it, you know, when it's feeling fine, play through. When it's hurting, you know, sit him out. I mean, this is a thing that I'm not really sure. So that's kind of why I'm like, well, I would just say assume he plays 75% of the games. Where do you see this Pacers, the ceiling is for them then?
No, absolutely. So, I mean, with that in mind, I mean, yeah, it is going to all come down to TJ Warren because I see everybody else being who they are right now, if not even a little better outside of Oladipo's early sample size is quite amazing. And that, I mean, that could definitely drop it, especially from a percentages standpoint. And my biggest gripe right now with the Pacers is their depth. I don't believe in the depth whatsoever. And one major injury, if Warren misses significant time, that's going to really hinder their ceiling. But say everybody on paper, people even develop the ultimate ceiling where I could see this team. I can see them as a conference finals contender. I really do.
Wow.
And the rest up from there is how much more can you get out of this? Is like considering Turner's role right now, because I think he has a way higher ceiling than Indiana is going to allow him in the role he's playing. Aaron Holiday's got a way higher ceiling. I just don't think he's going to get anywhere else this year than what, I mean, we're about to see. So with that said, I do think conference finals is a possibility. I really believe that from a floor perspective. I mean, just with the team right now, I mean, there's always a trade that could happen. I mean, this team could get shook up pretty easily there. I mean, they're before the season, I think they were one of the biggest question marks with Turner and Oladipo being halfway in the door, I thought. So I think they could easily be like a 10 seed in the East. And that wouldn't shock me. And even with this team right now, if they ran it through the end, I think they could still get to 10 seed. But I don't see that. My prediction is going to be at this moment, from what I'm seeing, I'd say they're going to finish as a top 5 seed for sure. And maybe even higher. I think they could, I mean, at this rate, they could finish 2 or 3 in the East. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if they won even the East.
I would be shocked if they won the East.
I would be a little surprised.
Are you talking regular season standings?
Just yes, that's it.
I still would be shocked.
Let's be clear. I'm not saying I'd be absolutely out of my freaking mind if they won the Eastern Conference in the playoffs.
Yeah,
but regular season, I mean, it's a shorter season. You know, I mean, that 10 games is gonna matter for some people. I just feel like they're gonna rest with, I mean, more back-to-backs this year again. And I just think people are going to be more focused on the playoffs in general. So if they're smart, the seeding really doesn't matter for great teams. It doesn't. If you're in the playoffs, you're in the playoffs with no fans. I think home court advantage only matters with fans.
Well, hopefully we can see fans to some degree by the playoffs. If there's a vaccine, you know what I mean? If it's
right.
If I mean, that's what, 5 months away from now. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the Mark Cuban, when he came on Bill Simmons' podcast and was just talking so much about, you know, how they need fans to come back to the, you know, arenas, even if it's in a small capacity, that, I mean, that's really going to help. Just, you know, that's, you know, I mean, just having, just imagine 25% of the fans in there, like, it'd still be somewhat of an advantage just to have some cheering when you make a basket. Like, right. You know, I mean, it's still sad to think about the NBA without any fans and another playoffs without the fans, but, you know, it's COVID-19 season. What do you expect? It's just been unpredictable and very lackluster. So, but anyway, I mean, the playoffs were fun last year. I'm excited about this Pacers team. You know, my overall thought was, I think they're going to finish seventh. I think a lot of people had them penciled in at seventh, just because there's so many teams like Toronto. They're a team that a lot of people predicted would be better than the Pacers. I was kind of in that boat because I'm just a big Nick Nurse believer. Mm-hmm. Then you got Boston and Philadelphia got improved. I mean, Boston actually kind of took a step back. I think Philly improved overall. But with Kemba's injury and then losing Gordon Hayward, I feel like that was big losses for Boston. But still, I mean, with Tatum and Brown and just Marcus Smart, that group of guys, I feel like they were just – you know, a notch above the Pacers. And then you've got, of course, you've got Miami, Brooklyn, and Milwaukee are the other three. So just there's a lot of tough teams in the Eastern Conference. I thought Washington would be better. I thought Atlanta would finish around ninth. And then I had Orlando actually missing the 10. I had Charlotte finishing at 10th in my projections. But it is what it is at this point. But I really do think that the Pacers are a playoff team. I think that they're a team that will cause problems. But at the same time, in a playoff series, you know how this comes. In a playoff series, it always comes down to who has the best player on the court.
Right.
And if the Pacers don't have the best player on the court in the playoff series they're matched up with, then I could see them losing. I think that Boston is a good fit for the Pacers, a good matchup for them. And that would be a team that I'd be okay seeing in the playoffs. But, I mean, Toronto probably the same way. We haven't seen them yet, but based on how they're built, I think the Pacers could cause some problems for Toronto as well. But – you know, when you have Giannis-type players who the Pacers have struggled with, you have Embiid, someone the Pacers have constantly struggled with, and then Kevin Durant. I mean, those three teams to me are just too good and too talented for the Pacers to beat in a first-round playoff series.
So the Pacers got to kind of model like the Atlanta Hawks of like 14-15 and the Miami Heat of last year. The Heat were just depth, you know, and then top – and starting talent, really. I mean, that's what it came down to, and that's where the Pacers can beat a team that has better players, you know?
Yeah.
All their guys being on par and gelling and playing much better, and I think that's what the Pacers have going to their advantage. Just hopefully Bjorken can untap something and get that ceiling a little bit higher.
Yeah, and that's what the goal is, I think, for the Pacers. And I even said it at the beginning of the year, like, I think that this year is kind of a gap year for them to kind of get familiar with Bjorken, his system, see what they have with the double bigs under Bjorken, see what Oladipo looks like. And then next year is the year that they can really start putting their stamp on this Eastern Conference and kind of show where they belong. And to me, you know, if that's making a move, if that's losing Oladipo in the offseason, at least you know what direction you're heading for the future. But, it's a lot of things to talk about with the Pacers. So, been talking a lot of Pacers here. I know you're a guy that covers the NBA. So is there anything on your heart that you just want to talk about as far as the NBA goes?
Man, it's tough.
Besides James Harden.
I could go anywhere. Yeah, I mean, that's the talk of the town, the trade talk there. Don't want to necessarily get in depression mode talking about my Wolves, but I don't know what's your thoughts on the Golden State Warriors? I think they're a very interesting team. I think that's quite interesting, the up and down there. I mean, how about any team that started off pretty poorly, like Denver or Dallas, Golden State? I mean, are there any teams that you think that are just bad sample sizes that are going to turn out good? Like Toronto, you mentioned. Yeah, I think they're going to end up being really good again. But I don't know. Where do you want this to go?
I picked the Warriors to finish eighth in the playoffs. I thought they would make a play-in game.
I was right there with you then.
I think Draymond not being out there is a big part of this culture. And I think, you know, this is probably just like a terrible thing to say based on my perspective, but like just seeing Draymond on TV and talking about, you know, how motivated he is and just seeing him getting in such better shape, I really thought like, oh, you know, them missing the playoffs and being out this long could be really good for them, you know, get some rest and kind of like get themselves like re-energized, you know, KD and then all these injuries, you know, then when Klay went down, like it really did put a sting on the Warriors' upcoming chances this season. And I was really, you know, thinking about changing it once that happened, but it's like, you're talking about a guy in Steph Curry who was the back-to-back MVP of the league. This is a unanimous MVP. Like this dude is unreal. And he's a great teammate. Sure, he's not the greatest defensive player, but he's a guy that can get a bucket anytime he wants. So I like Golden State. I still think that the Western Conference is just a bear. And, you know, you said you didn't want to bring up the Wolves, and I don't blame you because I'm not a believer in Minnesota, even though I like Karl Towns and not the biggest D-Lo guy. I think he's fine, but don't think he's the answer for them there. I think Anthony Edwards is a great pickup.
Yeah.
He was the guy that I would have taken first overall in the draft as well.
Cool.
So, I mean, I was fine with that, but I just feel like, you know, the Western Conference is just too deep for Minnesota to really, you know, make a serious run out of play-in spot. Yeah, I mean,
Towns is going to be out a while, too. It's pretty shitty.
So, it sucks for them, but I'm excited about Golden State because I want to see what they look like when Draymond gets back. And, you know, everybody likes to crap on Kelly Oubre right now because he can't hit a shot. And a lot of people like to hate on Wiggins. You know that from his days in Minnesota. Right. But it's, you know...
Hey, he had a great game last night.
Yeah,
He does that. They're getting the full force. He starts you incredibly low, and then he's going to hit a couple games, and he'll have his eight great games throughout the year, and just every time you want to start believing in him, and it'll just bring you right back.
If you could just get Andrew Wiggins to play every game like he's playing against the Cavs or the Thunder, then I think, you know, you've got yourself an all-star, all-NBA-level guy. But unfortunately, that doesn't happen except a couple times a year because I don't know what it is, but it's like every time I see them play the Thunder, he always has a good game or like a game-winning shot, like just something ridiculous. And you're like, okay, Andrew Wiggins. And then every time he plays the Cavs, he's just like, okay, you guys traded me for Kevin Love. Watch this. And it's like always has a good game there. But other than that, it's just like he's so hot and cold.
Yeah, and that's exactly.
The depth of the Warriors is just bad. You know what I mean? Like, got Wiseman. I mean, I don't know what his fit's going to look like with Draymond.
He's doing really good, man.
Yeah.
He's been fun. And him and Tyrese Halliburton are probably the two best rookies right now, the way they're playing. Mm-hmm. I obviously believe in Wiseman a lot more. And he's looking really, I'm not going to say polished, but he looks like he belongs. Okay. Yeah. He looks like he's comfortable out there. No matter the position they put him in, no matter what they're expecting of him. He's just doing something that's somewhat meaningful. It's not like impactful leading to wins by any means, but it's something that you want to see out of him this early in his career and gives a bright a glimpse of hope, you can say. But it is good. It's really good what we're seeing. It's just not like, oh, this guy is going to be the reason why they're 5-2 without Draymond and really knows where he belongs in the court and a two-way monster. No, he's just doing things here and there that are showing, oh, this guy could be very, very, very good for a long time.
Well, and that's a really good sign as a rookie big man because
– all you ask for.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, you know, with big men, they always take longer to develop in the NBA for some reason. It always takes them a few years to really get their feet wet, but if he can be this impactful – at this moment, you know, that means that he's only going to get that much better. And how old is he? 19 years old at this point.
Yep.
So super young. And, you know, you were talking about the Warriors and this is something that crossed my mind. I don't know if I saw a tweet about it, but I was thinking to myself, you know, when Durant was on the Warriors, they were considered the villains of the NBA. When LeBron went to Miami, they were considered the villains of the NBA. And right now I'm thinking to myself, number one, who is the most hated player in the NBA right now? And who is the team that's the biggest villain in the NBA right now? And I feel like that's kind of a tough answer because
it's easy. It's James Harden.
You think James Harden is the most hated player in the NBA right now?
Oh yeah.
And what is your reasoning for that?
I think he's always been, to be honest, but okay. Even more so now, just because he gave people a reason not to like him. And I don't know. I don't think the majority of people even really care about strip clubs or people going to strip clubs, but it's the fact that he wasn't there for his team in training camp and it gave him a reason. And they thought he was a little overweight and they didn't want to consider context or anything before. And which this has been very similar to the past. And maybe there's a chance he wanted to just get it out of him before the season. And he did end up making it to game one, even though they had it delayed a little bit. But let's let's be honest. Hey, all that matters is the reports weren't 100% accurate, even though it's going to be that way all year. Teams are going to stand up for their players and do whatever they can to go around all these loopholes, because it's just going to be a season of loopholes, really. But he made it to game one, and he's played both games, and he's played amazingly. But yeah, people are always going to find ways to hate on James Harden, always because of the way he plays. It's kind of like Malcolm Brogdon and Sabonis. They're underrated because people don't like watching the way they play. But then you throw in a personality that a lot of people don't like, and having things outside of the court that give people a reason just get riled up, and just a reason to hate this guy even more, I can say. I mean, even though they might not even hate the reason why they hate him.
Well, and the thing is, like, I still kind of think, like, if there's a team, though, I would say it's probably the Lakers, just because Anthony Davis got his way there, you know, forced his way there. They're the top dog.
Most hated team.
Yeah.
Lakers all day, every day.
Yeah, and they're on national media. Everybody just, you know, goes gaga over them. You know what I mean? Which is whatever. You get tired of hearing about it eventually. But I'm just like, when I look at James Harden, though, and he's probably you're probably right, which I would tend to gravitate towards him being the most hated player. But it's like, when I think of teams and players that are like the most hated, it's usually a team or a player that, you know, is making it to finals, you know, making it to multiple conference finals. And there has been times where he's made it. There's no doubt about it, you know, but at the same time, I'm not trying to knock on his success, but it's usually guys in the playoffs that people just hate. And I don't know if they hate him or just hate that he, you know, doesn't seem to always come through in the clutch in the playoffs or whatever the narrative is on him. Comes up short against other teams. You know, he can't do it the Rocket way, that whole thing. But it's just like, is there any other players out there that are considered villainous? I just can't really think of it.
It's such a lovable league.
Man. It is. And it didn't used to be
that. These guys are awesome. And that's the best part. It's a players league. And they get better every year. And the development's so awesome to watch unfold. And the only other team that comes to mind is the Brooklyn Nets. I just think people will forever hate KD and for the Golden State bull crap and whatever you call that, and get frustrated by, and Kyrie and just the loopy guy that he is. I think they're right there with the Lakers as the most hated for sure, just because of those two. I mean, nobody else on that team is really even frowned upon or got players that guys don't like. I mean, they're all likable players down the roster outside of those two. But how can you not like watching KD and Kyrie on the court? It's just like, don't listen to their press conferences. Don't watch any videos with them in it, and you'll be just fine. Just watch them on the court. They're as exciting as there's ever been on the court. And it's been an awesome product so far outside of tonight. They didn't look perfect, but it was a fun game going back and forth with Atlanta. That was for sure.
They're incredible athletes, incredible basketball players. And, you know, they've put on some performances in the NBA finals and ones that we'll never forget. But yeah, it's their off court stuff that makes people like them. And I think that's probably similar for James Harden. You know, it's like, I'm just trying to think, like, I feel like maybe another guy that a lot of fan bases probably hate if they're playing against him, is Joel Embiid. He just talks trash, you know.
Right. Players that, I mean, it comes down to players that seem entitled or players that call out their teammates and, just players that people don't think are all in on the team and making players around them better and just being that perfect role model that everybody wants and they want as their franchise player. But everybody's different. You got to embrace all these different personalities. And it's the only thing that really frustrates me with players is when they call out their teammates in press conferences when they sucked. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I can give you – big list of players who've done that. You've had one in your past life over there, and he's the prime example.
He's kind of becoming a villain, which is weird. It's so weird to see
he's
that.
He's bringing that on himself, though.
He is, in some ways. But, Yeah, it's just like he made number one on Shaqton last night too, which is just like passing to the referee when they were getting beat by 50 points versus the Mavericks on Sunday afternoon. But oh man, poor Paul George. You know, at this point, I just kind of feel sorry for the guy, to be honest with you.
Well, he's just the guy that never really makes players around him better. He's just such a talented player in himself. He's just a really good role player is what he is. I mean, that's, if the team around – he's going to be as good as his teammates are. And he's obviously going to, I mean, lift the team, but he's not going to lift his teammates. He's just – really good player. Let's just put it at that. I mean, he's probably, properly rated all time, I'd say.
Yeah, and I think he's in the perfect role that he was when he got traded to OKC and where he is now. He's a perfect number two guy. That's what we've always said in Indiana.
Kawhi's healthy.
Yeah, but I mean, he is a Robin more than he is a Batman, and that's not a knock. It's just he is better at being the second option, and it's just defensively he can be a menace. We've seen he has the talent to be an MVP candidate. There's no doubt about it. I mean, when you dream up the perfect type of player, I mean, he's got a lot of those things that you want. When you're talking defense, you're talking a guy that can shoot the three, guy that can get to the rim, you know, got decent handles. I mean, he's got a lot of the packages that you want, but I just feel like, you know, there's guys that do it better than him. And that's why he's, you know, probably, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh, whatever in the small forward ranking in that position. But it is what it is with Paul George. I mean, I think Pacer fans are past it, and they're really excited that Oladipo and Sabonis are the guys that got back. And, you know, those are two guys that are all stars in their own right and continue to play well for the Pacers. So as we wrap this up, I threw rap out there as a little comeback for you. You were really high on Pascal Siakam last year. Are we still on the Pascal hype train, or have we cooled off a little bit, Zach?
Ah, you had to do that to me. definitely taming a little bit, but I am not. I'm not leaving. I'll never leave Pascal. I mean, he's still a good player. He's doing good things. He's just not. I thought he'd take another jump and bounce back after last year. It's three games, okay? It's an early sample size, but he's a guy that should be coming out of the gates hot. So there should be no excuses for Pascal Siakam. He should have been fully ready to tear this league up right away and take advantage of the people in the games. You can take advantage of other teams, that's for sure. But he hasn't had bad games. He's had decent games, good games, just not great games in the games that I'd expect and more. I mean, he had 15 rebounds in a game. He had 6 and 8 assists in 2 out of 3. 16-20 is just not shooting great percentages right now. He's really only had one bad shooting game. Let's be honest. So the biggest thing is that he's not leading to wins. Okay. They're 0-3 right now. And he's making a lot of dumb mistakes in crunch time. That's the biggest thing, where he's looking closer to Paul George than like a Jason Tatum, or even, I'm not going to say Kawhi, because I never thought he'd be Kawhi, but I thought he'd be like Paul George or better, but he's looking more just like Paul George. Let's be honest, just like that. So let's keep it at that. I still believe in him. I'm not going to give up for him to take that top 10 leap that I think he can be before the season, but it's definitely, my percentage is going down, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, no, I don't, when you came out, when you were out there that high on them on the fourth season show last year, I was like, are we, I mean, I get that he's really improved and he's really developed, but it's like, I just don't know how much I believe in Pascal Siakam as like a top 10, top 15 player, like maybe top 20, 25, like, sure, I'll give it to you. Like, he's got a lot of skill sets that showcase he could be a really good player, but I needed a larger sample size, I think. And hey, you know what? I don't mind a guy that's bold, and you were very adamant about it. You did not try to shy away from it. You had guests on. You told them what you felt, and whether they agreed or disagreed, you stuck to it. And, you know, I appreciate that. But you also have a brand new podcast that you've just launched. So tell the people about that, where they can find you at, and what you guys got going on over there.
Appreciate it. And before I do this, Pascal has improved as a playmaker. He's averaging a career high in assists right now. Okay. He's averaging 5 assists a game, 83% for the free throw line. He's never been above 78. So he's doing some categories a little better, some things. But, yeah, that crunch time play, Pascal, please do not let me down. Anyways, Alex, fun as always. Appreciate you having me on. My new show is called The Noble and Rue Show. We're about 20 shows in. We have gotten a lot of different personalities from LeVar Ball to first NFL player. We got some big name NFL players, musicians, athletes, all in the works. Colin Sexton's been our best NBA player we've had. So the big names keep rolling. We're growing at a good rate. Everything's on Ball is Life. So please check us out, rate, subscribe. Tell me what you like, don't like, what type of guests, and I'll try to work on it for you.
Awesome, man. Well, make sure you guys check that out. I know Zach is just a grinder and does great work. So be sure to check that out. And if you do subscribe, go back and listen to some of those old episodes. LeVar Ball is somebody that you can never hear too much of, or maybe you can, but he's always got interesting things to say. But So thanks everybody for listening to another episode of Setting the Pace. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Alex Golden NBA and follow our podcast at Setting the Pace 3. We will talk to y'all in a little bit.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.